but that's the old me. Out in, out of my window, throw down, 'cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a beautiful Saturday. Hope we can make your Saturday even a little bit more beautiful by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
You know what I love about this show?
What do you love about
every week? We're either, you know, going from a week of feast or famine. And I don't want to say last week we didn't have a bunch of current news to talk about, but this is an exciting week. We've got a lot of topics to discuss, things that both of us hold near and dear to our hearts, right? We're going to talk about Star Trek. We're going to talk about some kaiju. We're going to talk about a couple of the shows that we love. And I kind of wanted to kick something off with you that I just was reading on Vulture a couple days ago. And for me and you, this might not be a huge revelatory article, but I think for casual movie fans and maybe people that just aren't as familiar with the inner workings of Rotten Tomatoes, I think there's a pretty interesting discussion to be had based on this Vulture article that kind of just, I wouldn't even call it an expose because it's not hard news, but I would say that it's kind of pulling back the curtain on some of the ways that studios have learned to game the system, if you will. And I wanted to kind of get your take on the amount of weight that you give to Rotten Tomatoes versus maybe IMDb or other aggregates or critics. Like, what do you think about Rotten Tomatoes as kind of being the gatekeeper as to what audiences see as good versus bad?
I mean, it has become that. It's become the brand, you know, in the way that once upon a time, Siskel and Ebert were the brand.
Sure.
Or, you know, there have been a few other, you know, prominent reviewers over the years. I think there are still a few prominent critics that hold some sway independently of some kind of aggregate. I think you have to understand how Rotten Tomatoes works. And I'm saying that just before you get into any kind of gamesmanship on manipulating how Rotten Tomatoes works, just Understanding how it's meant to work, in that it's meant to be an aggregate. And that score is not, oh, it's 95% fresh. That means it's, you know, one of the best movies of the year. That could be that 9.5 out of 10 critics thought it was decent.
Right.
You know, it's 9.5 out of 10 critics gave it at least a barely passing review. That's not the same thing as everybody loves this movie. There are other aggregators that maybe weigh a little harder on the qualitative part of the review and not just the, for lack of a better term, pass fail. I also think Rotten Tomatoes' level for pass fail is set a little higher than it should be. Like a B minus is a fail. Like a 2.5-star review out of 5 is a fail. And I think that's a little iffy. But above and beyond that, so you got to understand all of that. You got to understand going in that 95% does not mean better than 95% of other movies out there.
And that means, resonates with me before we move on to the next part. I think that that's a big thing that needs to be discerned with audiences. Like, for example, when we're looking at a lot of these critically beloved movies that do come up for awards consideration during the end of the year, a lot of those do sit, you know, between your 90 and 100%, but that doesn't mean it's a 95 to 100 out of 100 scoring from the worst movie being 0 to the best movie being 95, but often we do look at it and be like, oh, this must be a very high-quality movie, when in actuality what we should be saying is, oh, a whole lot of people liked this movie.
Yeah, or a whole lot of people found this movie acceptable. You know, like it's
absolutely
like, yeah, that like it's a decent watch, that kind of thing. Now, granted, if a movie is good enough to be running the table at the awards, it should also have enough good reviews that it's going to have a high Rotten Tomatoes rating. But there's a difference between a 95% rating on, just pulling a movie out of my hat here, Banshees of Inisherin. You know, high quality movie that got a lot of great reviews and did very well on aggregators like Rotten Tomatoes, and a 95% review on an MCU movie.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, they may not necessarily be, whereas the Banshees of Inisherin may have maybe 95% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, that may be 95 out of 100, 3.5 and 4 star reviews. Versus,
right,
you know, an MCU might be 95 out of 100, 2.5 to 4 star reviews. You know,
right,
the mix is a little different. And there's different aspirations.
Very good point.
So you got to understand that. So that, getting into that, first of all, above and beyond that, is anybody really surprised that if there's some kind of system, that Hollywood's going to try to find a way to game the system?
Or even let's pull back a little bit and say, is there any system that's not being gamed by someone? So I don't even think it's specifically a Hollywood thing, but I do 100% agree with you. Of course, there's always going to be people who try to play the game to the best of their advantage. It's like card counting or something, right?
Yeah, there's going to, it's human nature. If there's a system, you're going to try to find a way to beat it. Whether you should do that, whether that's honest or ethical or not, that's another story. And then that's up to each individual person to decide if, you know, it's going to fit their ethics, whatever the gaming mm-hmm. of the system may be. And you may feel like there's a system that deserves to be gamed. I don't know if Rotten Tomatoes is that system. I don't know how I'd feel about it ethically. I certainly, if I were a filmmaker, I wouldn't like to find out that the system was being gamed on my behalf rather than people just judging my film based on my, you know, creative efforts.
What if it was in favor of your project and you had financial stakes in it?
I don't know, man. It's hard to say. I would like to think my ethics would be a little bit higher than that. On the other hand, I might feel like if it's going to get more eyes in front of my movie and people are going to genuinely like the movie once they see it, if I believe in the product, would I be above, you know, doing everything I could to get people to actually see it so that they could find out for themselves whether they like the product or not? I don't know, man. That's a tough call to make. It's a tough call
I agree with you.
But I believe it's being used two ways. I believe it's being used to game the system to put eyes in front of films. And I believe it's being weaponized by studios to take out their competition.
Interesting. Now that's an interesting angle. And I'm sure a whole conversation to get in onto itself. What do you think about the democratization of who is able to submit reviews? Is that a net positive or a net negative? And for the listeners, I say this in situations where, like, it used to be only accredited film critics who wrote for a publication of the more, I suppose, what we would say traditional or prestige. And now, with good intentions, they kind of widened the net to include groups of people that maybe weren't all 60-year-old white men. But with that comes a lot of fan culture, publications, websites that are really geared towards one thing, and mm-hmm. also maybe takes a little bit of the prestige away from filmmakers or from film critics.
Well, I mean, the argument for that is they still have the top critic rating. Which, you know, so you still have that. Beyond
good
that,
point.
I think the diversification of viewpoints is always a good thing. It's always a good thing mm-hmm. to see more viewpoints represented. But you got to consider the source. And that means looking at the individual reviews and not just looking at a number. And
yes.
that's what it really boils down to.
Right.
With any critic, any critic has a value if you get to know that critic's voice. And if you get to know how often you agree with that critic and how often you don't agree with the critic. And that's how movie criticism should be used. aggregation is a shortcut. Shortcuts don't always work. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
It's worked so far, but we're not out yet.
I want to know what you're thinking. There are some things you can't hide. I want to know what you're feeling. Tell me what's on your mind.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And as we speak right now, many of you know that if you listen to the show regularly on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, we're on Saturday afternoons, but we record the show on Friday. And as we speak on Friday, it is Star Trek Day. And also, yeah, I want to mention, speaking of, if you do listen to the show on the air, we are back on as a podcast. The show used to be regularly put up as a podcast. Hadn't happened for a little over a year now, but we are back on as a podcast now. And fun fact, you can actually get that podcast a day before we're on the air. So if for some reason you had already noticed us showing back up in your podcast feed, you may actually get to hear us talking about this on Star Trek Day, because it'll be up a couple hours after less than a couple hours after we finish recording. But anyway, it is Star Trek Day, celebrating everything to do with this franchise that has been around for 60 plus years that many of us love so much. And just wanted to spend a little time kind of catching up with where we are with the franchise right now, and kind of looking at what the state of Star Trek is.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Why is today Star Trek Day?
That's a darn tootin' good question, Jeremy. I want to say...
Sorry, Julio.
it's probably, and I'm going to look this up to be sure, but I am guessing that it is the anniversary of the day the original series debuted.
Makes a lot of sense.
But let's take a look here.
And, so for those of you that are keeping score at home, as Julio said, we are available on podcast now, which is something that's extremely exciting for both of us. It does up a little bit of our shareability on social media. So if this is your first time hearing it, make sure you add us to your feed. That way you can hear two dudes talking about movies. Because if there is one thing you need in your life right now, it is two more dudes talking about movies. So we would love to hear from you and hope that you enjoy the show. Julio, what did you find out, bud?
Well, I'm still double-checking on that. But September 8th is known as Star Trek Day across the world. The press release stated that on September 8th, 1966, Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry introduced audiences to a world that championed diversity, inclusion, acceptance, and hope. So, awesome. Yes, it is the date that Star Trek, the original series, premiered originally on NBC.
gold star for our boy Julio for picking that up, picking up on that.
Yeah, despite the fact that it's now owned by the Paramount CBS conglomerate and originally produced by a lot of people don't know this. Originally, the studio that produced the show was Desilu Studios.
Okay.
Now, if you know what, if you don't know what Desilu Studios is, Desilu was a conglomeration of the names Desi and Lucille.
Oh.
So Desilu Studios was the studios that Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball created when they started I Love Lucy. And we have in many ways to thank Lucille Ball for Star Trek existing.
And Desi and Lucy, other icons of celebrating diversity in a time when maybe it wasn't exposed to mainstream audiences in a way that, you know, they sort of pushed that stuff front and center with their series. And there's actually a really good documentary or a biopic on that starring Nicole Kidman. But yeah, that's really cool to know. We wouldn't maybe have Star Trek if not for them.
Yeah, I enjoyed that movie. Very much. Nicole Kidman and now I've forgotten who played
was it Javier Bardem?
Yeah, Javier Bardem. That's right. And J.K. Simmons played William Frawley, got an Oscar nomination for it. I enjoyed
that.
And the
name of it's escaping me.
Let's not get too far off into the Lucy of it all, since we're really here to talk about Star Trek and not Lucille Ball. But anyway, you know, here we are all these years later, so 66, so we're 60 plus years on from that. And, in some ways I think Trek is in a better place than it's ever been. Mm. I think we have, or maybe at least in a better place than it's been since, let's say, the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Can I ask you, do you believe that J.J. Abrams is responsible for ushering in this new era where there is such a positive response? Or do you think that there was a large sector of the audience that didn't like what Abrams was doing?
I think both are true, but I don't think Star Trek fandom is quite as toxic as Star Wars fandom.
No,
but there's but there's an element in there. There's there isn't a lot of fandoms. Like, there's no fan that, like, the fan that hates what they love.
Yes.
And
yes.
There is an element, especially amongst older Star Trek fans, that doesn't like any of the newer stuff. I'm glad to say I'm not one of those fans.
I know you're really liking the new Strange New Worlds.
I'm loving Strange New Worlds, and I'm loving also Lower Decks, which is getting ready to come back for a new season. It may be coming back this weekend, if I'm remembering correctly. But I just wanted to kind of look at the overall of the franchise. So there's a lot of different things you got to look at when you're talking about this franchise, because this is a multimedia franchise now. We've got the situation where on the big screen, it's kind of stalled out for the moment. And I wanted to talk about that for a minute, because we did have these three films that J.J. Abrams was involved in, either as a producer or as a director. And I thought all of them were pretty good films. They do take place in a different universe. And
the Kelvin timeline, if you will.
Yeah. Which there have been some small crossovers between the timelines. So that exists out there too. Very, very small. You have to know where you're looking for them, but they're there.
Is Voyager part of that timeline?
No, Voyager's not. So we're in this weird situation where the third movie did not do as well as they would have liked. And so we've been kind of stalled out, which is a shame, because the third movie is actually probably the best of the three that Abrams has been involved with.
And what a great cast.
Yeah. From a qualitative standpoint, I might put that as the highest of the three, although I like all three of them. But so it hasn't been a presence in theaters lately. But I think that's eclipsed by the fact that it's been such a big presence in the streaming world. And by the fact that we've had so many Star Trek series going concurrently for the past little bit. Now, we're in a weird spot right now where some of them have come to an end or are coming to an end, and in some ways controversially. So let's just kind of go down the hit parade real quick. I think that the two series right now that are the torchbearers, the ones that we know are continuing forward and that are kind of the standard bearers for Trek right now, are Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which just ended its second season, had a spectacular second season, some of the best Trek that's ever been done.
Nice.
That season just ended. We know that once the writers and actors strikes are over, there is going to be a third season of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And it's interesting because that series takes place in the original series era, but it takes place before the original series. So sure. We are seeing the first appearances in timeline of a lot of the characters from the original series, slowly but surely. We've seen Kirk, we've seen Spock, we've seen Uhura, we've just now seen Scotty at the end of this second season. So slowly we'll see that original cast come in, along with a bunch of other characters, some of whom we see in the original series, some of whom are new to this series. Really have enjoyed that series, and I just think if you watch one Star Trek series, that's the one to watch.
All right.
For really getting what Star Trek is all about. The other series that is continuing that I personally love and is my personal favorite, Star Trek Lower Decks, which is coming back this weekend for its fourth season. This is an animated series. It's set in the Next Generation era. And it just, this is a series that is off the wall and funny, but it has that love of Star Trek at its heart that you can't do without having that love for Star Trek.
Is Picard on the actual deck in Lower Decks?
No. It takes place on another ship. It takes place on the Cerritos. Okay. Which itself is kind of a lower class ship. So they have fun with that. But you do see characters from the other series pop up. We have seen characters from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager pop up in Lower Decks. And it's been a lot of fun. So those are the ones that are continuing, that we know are continuing forward. We have a situation now where Star Trek Prodigy, which is another animated series aimed at kind of a younger audience, was canceled and pulled off the streaming service. Despite that fact, they were in the midst of almost being done with the second season, and they are completing the second season, and we think the second season is going to be seen somewhere. It's a great show. I'd really like to see it continue. It's also in that Next Generation timeline and has just had some really good stories. I would really like to see that continue, but that one is kind of the stepchild right now. We'll talk some more about this when we come back. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, and we are celebrating Star Trek Day. So, that song's a little on the nose, but...
I kind of felt like I was going under for a procedure at the dentist office.
That was a group called The Firm, and that was a big novelty hit. I guess it was actually in the 80s, I want to say. At least when I first heard it was in the 80s. But that's like kind of like the Dr. Demento-y kind of take on Star Trek, if you will. 87 is when that came out. I just looked it up. But we were kind of like doing the rundown of where we are in the Star Trek the state of the franchise today, as we are, as we celebrate Star Trek Day. And we talked a little bit about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We talked a little bit about Lower Decks, which just came back this week. And I'm looking forward to catching up on the two new episodes that just dropped because, as I said, I really do love that series. I just think it's got such a great heart. And I really, really loved the crossover they did between that and Strange New Worlds this season, which was just a lot of fun to not only take a crossover between an animated show and a live action show, but shows that take place in different eras. So you had a time travel element too. It was just so much fun. I really enjoyed that. And then Star Trek Prodigy, as we said, is struggling to find a home right now. It's been pulled off of the Paramount Plus streaming service and one of these cost-saving measures that all of these services seem to be doing right now, which I still just don't get. I think it's just a matter of not wanting to pay people, which is the same thing that all the strikes are about right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just hope that Star Trek Prodigy finds a home and is able to continue. At the very least, I want to see the series that they've just about completed now and that they are completing. So I hope that we're going to get to see those episodes, if nothing else, even if they just do a straight to I don't even know what you go straight to anymore. Like, is it, you used to be able to say straight to DVD or straight to video or whatever, but like straight to streaming? Well, no, because they took it off the streaming service. So I don't care where they show it to me. I just wanted them to show me this series. I really enjoyed it.
Well, hey, there's these two series that kind of kicked off the whole era of streaming, and I wanted to get you to kind of weigh in on, and that's Discovery, which was the first, and then also Picard.
Yeah, so Star Trek Discovery is still going, but we are only getting one more season. We know that season 5 of Star Trek Discovery is going to be the last, and that is coming up on us pretty soon, too. I don't know if they finished shooting before the strikes happened or if the strikes interrupted shooting of season 5. But, I heard a lot of people say that Discovery started off rocky. And I guess I can kind of agree to that, but I have liked the show from the start. But I do think the show really found its way when it went off on its own way.
And when was that?
Well, the first two seasons of the show take place prior to the original series. So they're in the same era as Strange New Worlds.
Okay.
And actually, the first place that we saw Captain Pike and Spock and a couple of other characters who are now in Strange New Worlds was in Discovery.
Mm.
So Strange New Worlds, in a sense, is a spinoff of Discovery. It's also everything's a spinoff of the original series if you go back far enough.
Sure.
But at the end of season 2, Discovery, the ship Discovery, was thrown into the far future, farther than the future that Star Trek already takes place in. So
okay.
Starting with season 3, Discovery is the farthest in the future of any Star Trek series. It is way out ahead of Picard, Voyager, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, all of that. It takes place a couple hundred years after all of that. So you have this crew from the original series era thrown into a far-flung future where they're out of their time. And you get to see what has happened to the universe and where things go from there in that time period. And I really think that the show found its own way by doing that and just really become something special, to the point that the announcement that this next season will be the last was disheartening for me. I really have enjoyed the series. I enjoy the characters. They really have taken a big step forward on this series in particular, on the diversity and the open-mindedness and the welcoming of different peoples from different walks of life. And I just think it's going to be a shame to lose this series, although I'm assuming they were told in enough time that we're going to get a very organic conclusion and we're going to see the series come to a satisfying conclusion, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
same, Same true of Picard. Picard is a series that follows, again, Captain Picard, who was the captain from Next Generation, much later after his years on the Enterprise. And I think it's a series that had had varying degrees of success over the years in terms of both in terms of creatively and in terms of commercially. I think it started out pretty strong. I think we had a series that really kind of in a sense reminded me of something like Firefly in the Star Trek universe.
Okay.
Which was a lot of fun. The second season stepped away from that and time traveled back to our present day. Spent a lot of time in our present day. I think that it was fair to say that the season was mixed, but I liked it, but a lot of other people were a lot more indifferent on it. Got into a lot of things with Picard's history and with Q that I really enjoyed, and we got to have some fun with that. But the third season really was a very special thing because it brought back most of the original cast of Next Generation over the course of the series, to the point where by the end of the series, we had that whole cast reunited for this mission. And I really enjoyed that, but I also enjoyed the other parts of this season that included Seven of Nine from Voyager, who'd been on Picard from the start, being involved in the storyline, and just continuing to get a more and more prominent role. I enjoyed Rafi, another character who's been around since the first season of Picard, really coming into her own as well. We had a great new captain introduced, played by Todd Stashwick, who was an enjoyable character, and I would be interested to see if there's a way to do anything else with that character. But where we're left off at the end of this series is discovering that and we'll put up spoiler warnings here for anybody that hasn't watched Picard. We're left off at the end of this series, and this series has ended now. The season 3 was the last season of Picard.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We're left off with, in the course of this series, we discovered that Picard and Beverly Crusher secretly had a son together. Secretly in that Picard didn't know it. Beverly knew it and raised the child, but... So there is now, Picard has a son who is also Beverly Crusher's son who has now joined Starfleet. And he is stationed on this ship where Seven of Nine is the captain. Seven of Nine got promoted to captain over the course of this series. Rafi is her first officer. And this ship is now the next Enterprise.
Cool.
Yeah, the ship has been christened the NCC-1701F. So it is now the next, F, I think it is. So it's now the next Enterprise. And there's a lot of clamoring for there to be a follow-up series, which is called, at least in a lot of people's minds, Star Trek Legacy, that follows this Enterprise and follows this crew. Would very much like to see that happen. The third series of Picard was just so well done, and you really root for these characters that you see together at the end. And there were some great little cutscenes at the end of this series that just set up this new series perfectly. Would really love to see that happen. So that's where we are with the existing Star Trek series. There has been a couple of things announced that we know are forthcoming as well. They are talking about doing streaming movie-length stories for Star Trek. The first one that has been announced is the Section 33, which is like the Black Ops division of Starfleet. And that is going to focus on Michelle Yeoh's character, who was introduced during Discovery and was a recurring character throughout Discovery. Very much looking forward to seeing that because her character is great. Of course, Academy Award winner now, Michelle Yeoh. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And then we are getting a Starfleet Academy series. We don't know yet what era that's going to be set in, but that is something that has been talked about for decades, about the possibility of doing a series set at Starfleet Academy. We are finally getting that happening. So looking forward to seeing that. So I say, when I say that the state of the franchise is in the best place it's been in a long time, I really think it is with the development of all this streaming stuff. Of course, you still have novels and comics and all video games and all that stuff too. But I think there's a lot to celebrate with Star Trek right now, and I'm really appreciating that. Jeremy, I'm going to get you converted. You got to watch at least watch Strange New Worlds. Check that out and see how you feel about it.
Yeah, it's one that I've been backburnering, as you know, that tends to happen. But I would actually be really interested to check it out because we cannot overstate the impact that Star Trek in particular had in the fandom community and the world of conventions and just the amount of love that people have for it. It really does let me know that it's something special.
We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch on the line with us from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And we've got a bunch of kaiju-related news we want to get to. But real quick, before we move on from Star Trek, I just wanted to sneak in a quick plug for a good event that's coming up on October 1st at Cordova Lanes here in Pensacola. That is the Costume Bowl. And that is put together by our friends with the USS Continuum, which is the local Star Trek fan club, and our friends with the 501st Legion Pargi Squad and the Rebel Legion, the Star Wars costuming clubs here in Pensacola. They do this every year. They do a bowling event at Cordova Lanes. Everybody gets decked out in cosplay, and they raise a lot of money for some great causes here around town. So go check out that event if you can. I plan to be there myself. I'll always look forward to that. Always a good time, and it's just a really good thing that those groups do for our community. So shout out to them. Shout out to LaVon French and Jay Gallups, who are kind of the driving forces behind that event. Really appreciate what they do there. But yeah, let's move on, Jeremy, to the kaiju world.
What the hell is a kaiju, Julio?
It's a giant monster. You know this. You're just setting me up.
For the folks at home,
the kaiju is a giant monster. It's Godzilla. It's King Kong. It's Gamera, Mothra, Gigan, Mechagodzilla. Who else am I forgetting? What are some of the?
Well done, man. You got King Ghidorah. You got the Space Godzilla. You got Megalon. You got all sorts of awesome ones. Destoroyah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, any kind of monster that started out as a dude in a rubber suit, stomping on Tokyo. Although
we spent a segment talking about Star Trek and the way that it's been able to branch off into not just different actual mediums, but also different styles of storytelling, different genres within this science fiction framing. And Godzilla is another one of those things that between what they call the Showa era, which was the very earliest kind of iterations of Godzilla after the original film, he was kind of similar to Gamera, like a children's character. And then we move into the 1980s with the Heisei era, and it's a much more kind of dark horror tone. We get into the Millennium era, and it evolves again. And I think no matter what decade you grew up in, there was a Godzilla that kind of spoke to you. And with the release of this legendary MonsterVerse happening right now in America with the Monarch series, which we're going to discuss, and then also with Minus Zero, which is actually a Toho production that's going on in Japan, we're getting like a whole bunch of different Godzilla things, and he's seemingly thriving in a way that we've never seen before, which is awesome.
Yeah, well, and there's been an animated series on Netflix as well. So, and there's also a Kong animated series going on one of the streaming services. I can't remember which one has that, but that's kind of tangential. Kong is weirdly kind of like tied in, but not tied in some ways.
Yeah, it is interesting.
So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, and not just that, but we got to put out that, you know, in the last year or so, we've seen cinematic revivals for Ultraman and Kamen Rider. And there's a new Gamera animated series on Netflix. So, kaiju and kaiju related stuff is really kind of regaining a prominence that hasn't had in a long while. But I think the biggest news right now is this Monarch series that we're going to get on Apple TV Plus, mm-hmm. That just dropped a trailer this week, which is tying in to this whole legendary MonsterVerse that we've seen develop over the past few years with films like the most recent American film titled Godzilla. And then followed by Kong Skull Island, and then Godzilla versus Kong. Or was it Kong versus Godzilla?
Can I get you to check in with me on these? How are you feeling about the legendary MonsterVerse?
I'm forgetting a movie in there also as well, which is Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's four films in that world. I think it's been mixed. I think the visuals have been great. I like the mythology. I like that this whole Monarch is this shadowy organization that monitors/ I guess tries to manipulate the monsters, for lack of a better term, or tries to protect the world from them, depending on what view you have.
You'd think after like 8 major cities being destroyed, the cat would be out of the bag, but I guess they're still operating in secrecy somehow.
And Pensacola, don't forget.
Don't
forget Godzilla did turn up in Pensacola and King of the Monsters. And
matter of fact, there is a song titled Pensacola on the Godzilla versus Kong soundtrack. A little fun piece of trivia.
We took a nice side trip to Chinatown in Pensacola in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah, because you know we have a Chinatown here. Oh wait, no, we don't. It wasn't necessarily the most realistic depiction of Pensacola, but that's a small quibble.
It's no Atlantic Rim. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah. Well, I still maintain that that's what actually happened to the Three Mile Bridge. That Godzilla stepped on a Skanska barge, and it was like a layup.
They only wish.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're getting this series now that's going to explore this mythology a little further, and we got a cool little trailer that dropped just in the last day or two. And one of the things I love about this trailer is the series is going to take place over several decades, and we're going to see one character at two different ages, played by two different actors. But
this
they did the
amazing.
Best possible casting for that. So in present day, this character is going to be played by the great Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Fantastic actor. Love seeing him involved with this franchise. Can't wait to see what he brings to it. But in the scenes that take place in the past, it's going to be played by his son, Wyatt Russell.
No way.
Yeah. Who looks
smart.
Yeah. Who looks a lot like him. And of course we saw him on Falcon and the Winter Soldier as John Walker, the U.S. agent. We're going to see him again in Thunderbolts in the MCU. So, an actor that's got kind of a growing profile, but getting to play a younger version of his old man.
So cool. What a great way of approaching this story and just attaching top-tier talent. When you and I watched the trailer together, we also saw that John Goodman from Kong Skull Island is going to be in it. So you're putting in these heavy-hitter actors. And if there has been a complaint about the MonsterVerse movies, and I contend that it's really hard for any actor to stand up against a building-sized kaiju and be as interesting, but it's that the human characters kind of fall short. So when you get in heavies like Wyatt and Kurt Russell to be your lead characters, mixed with the kind of VFX that we're seeing in this trailer, I think we have a formula for something that could be incredibly entertaining.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm not putting the fault on that, because I don't necessarily disagree with you with your assessment on the movies there, but the fault on that is not the actors. The fault on that is
no,
the
writer. Agreed.
I mean, we've had strong actors in these movies, people like Millie Bobby Brown and people like Kaylee Hoddle, who came here and was great in Godzilla vs. Kong, the young actress who played the deaf girl that befriended Kong.
Oh, yeah.
People like...
Rebecca Hall,
Kyle Chandler,
you got
Rebecca
Vera
Hall.
Farmiga.
Yeah, you know, the casting is good. It's not the actors.
Mm-hmm.
It is that the writing has given the human side a little bit of a short shrift, which I kind of get, because you're here to see the monsters in a lot of ways. But,
and I think that you could take that same criticism and level it against 75 to 80% of the Toho movies. I think a lot of the problems that people are acting like they're exclusive to the American iteration of this character are actually something that's long plagued the franchise, because how do you make the human characters as interesting? We're all there, for better or worse, to see these two kaijus go up against each other at the end.
Well, and you know, here's the other thing that I think was exciting about the trailer, and this got dropped in some photos a week or so before, but just seeing it in the trailer and seeing the proof, obviously, this is a Monarch series. We knew we would see kaiju in this series, but it was up in the air as to whether we were going to see the big guy himself, the king of the monsters, the big G, Godzilla. Here to tell you, Godzilla's in this. We do
in
get to see Godzilla in this series.
Glorious rendering.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to see that. And then, of course, we have, as you mentioned, the Godzilla Minus Zero film that just dropped a new trailer as well. And so that we get to have the Godzilla multiverse, if you will. I mean, they don't play it that way. These things don't cross over with each other. But, we still get to have these great films coming out of Japan that we're going to get to see in the States, too. But we get to see these.
New director seems to have such a deep reverence for not just the original Godzilla King of the Monsters, but also the 2014 legendary. Like, I think he liked a lot of the imagery in that, but it seems like he is going to give us a very serious and very somber Godzilla. And personally, I enjoy Godzilla being treated as almost as if he's like a natural catastrophe or like a disaster. Or
well, Godzilla as a metaphor goes back to the original Godzilla film.
Mm.
You know, Godzilla was originally a metaphor for nuclear disaster.
Yes.
Yeah. So, there's definitely some history to that. And that's one of the things I liked about Shin Godzilla too. You know, I think it did such a good job with that, but we could talk about this forever. Unfortunately, we are out of time. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.